This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, big news in the Boston area on Wednesday. Danny Ainge stepping down as the Celtics president of basketball operations after 18 years on the job there. Brad Stevens, Celtics head coach, has been tapped to replace him, and a coaching search will begin in Boston immediately. A lot of layers to peel back on this. No better person to peel them back with than Ryan McDonough, the former Celtics assistant general manager. He worked with Danny Ainge for 10 years, does a daily podcast now as well with Odyssey. Ryan, what's up, man? Thanks for joining me.
Chris, always great to be on with you. An eventful day in New England. I wish it would have started a little later because I was on my first coffee of the morning when the news broke out here on the West Coast. But certainly something that it wasn't a complete shock with Danny Ainge stepping down today. But I think everything else that went into it, especially with the Brad Stevens promotion or change in roles, it was a wild day in New England. And I'm sure we'll continue to talk about it in the coaching search for a while here going forward.
So let's peel back a few of these layers one at a time. You said not a huge shock, and I agree with you. This has been in the water supply for a few months now, at least for me anyway. Talk of Danny Ainge has been the talk of NBA executive text messages or phone calls that you have with people all the time. There was an expectation that he would be out on his own accord at the end of the season. So I guess your reaction, having worked with him, to him stepping down and his explanation as to why he stepped down, which included issues with his health.
I think it all makes sense, Chris. I was in the Celtics front office from 2003 to 2013, a little bit over a decade. Danny Ainge was actually hired a few months after I was. I was one of the first hires by Wick Grosbeck and Steve Pagliuca after they bought the team as an entry-level guy in the video room on the scouting side, and then Danny Ainge was hired about 3 months later. So we developed a great relationship right away, worked together for a decade. And I bring that up just because to do that job for 18 years, Chris, especially in that market, it's a grind. It really is. You know, obviously, the team had a lot of success. They were one of the most successful franchises in the league over that time period. You know, last 6 years I was there, we went to the playoffs every year, three conference finals, two NBA finals in 2008, 2010, and then the championship in 08. They've since gone to three more Eastern Conference finals. And I bring that up because the job is always hard, but there's more pressure and the season's obviously longer the more you win. So recently in my conversations with Danny Ainge over the past year or so in particular, I did sense some fatigue. Obviously the past 15 months for everybody in the NBA has been very difficult with the season pausing and then the Orlando restart and the added testing this year with the pandemic. It's been a challenge and a grind for everyone. And I think after doing the job at a high level for 18 years, it was just time for Danny Ainge to take a break, take a step back. And I do think the two heart attacks he had while on the job, while doing the job for the Celtics, certainly played a part in this decision, especially in terms of his family's influence and them saying, look, you know, you need to slow down. You need to take a break and not run yourself into the ground.
Yeah, he had that first heart attack in 2009, the second in 2019. So, I mean, that would, you know, probably impact anybody that went through that, especially a guy like Danny Ainge, getting a little bit older as time goes on. You know, as you know, like 18 years is a lifetime for an NBA executive. I mean, these jobs do have a shelf life. You only see a handful, whether it's coaches or GMs, that last, you know, more than 10 plus years. They just, this turnover in this business. And for Danny to do it 18 years is a really remarkable accomplishment. I want to get into his legacy later because I think that's an important conversation. But while I was not shocked that Danny Ainge stepped down, I was blown away, man, that Brad Stevens is the new president of basketball operations for the Celtics. 8 years removed from being hired out of Butler, Brad Stevens is now running the show in Boston. How did you react to, you know, it wasn't even like a search. I mean, Brad Stevens was immediately announced as the new president the day Danny's retirement was announced.
Yeah, like you said, Chris, it wasn't a search. It was more of a succession plan as far as here's what we're going to do going forward. And here's how organizationally we're going to keep that continuity and that stability, which I think they'll be able to do relatively easily, especially on the front office side, because Mike Zarin and Austin Ainge, Danny's top two lieutenants, especially after I left for the Suns, those guys have been with the franchise for a decade plus now. And they'll help Brad, I think, a lot in the transition into the front office. So it was an initial shock. But then the more I thought about it, and thought about Wick Rausbeck and Steve Pagliuca, who, again, hired me way back in 2003, who I know very well. It wasn't a shock because those guys value stability. They value continuity. They obviously value Brad's basketball acumen. And if you look at their history, Chris, they have supported people, their top executives and head coach in particular, during difficult times. I go back to 2006-07, that season when I was in the Celtics front office, and I think we lost 18 games in a row, longest losing streak in the illustrious history of the franchise. Danny was allegedly on the hot seat. Doc Rivers getting booed every night during starting lineups. The owner stood behind Danny and Doc and the rest of us. And, you know, obviously we had a great run after that, after the trades for Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett that offseason in 07. So I bring it up because, when there's smoke, there's fire. With a lot of these franchises, you hear this GM is going to be fired, this coach is going to be fired, and then most of the time it does happen. The Celtics ownership operates a little bit differently than that, and I think this is them going to Brad Stevens saying, look, we trust your basketball acumen. We trust your judgment. More than anything, we trust your leadership, and we want you to be part of this organization. And now, Brad has the ability to really put his imprint on this franchise in a different way, which obviously starts with hiring a new head coach.
What do you, you've done the job as a top executive. Is there, I know you haven't been an NBA head coach, but is there a different temperament that's needed, a different skill set that's needed? You mentioned the basketball acumen, and I agree. Brad Stevens is one of the smartest basketball minds I've come across in all my years of covering the NBA. But it's a different job. Knowing how to draw up a brilliant play in a timeout is a lot different than kind of differentiating between two Turkish forwards or whatever that are available in the second round of the draft. What is he in for? What kind of adjustment is he in for taking over that role?
Yeah, I didn't expect Semi Erden and Omer Asik to come up on this, talking about two Turkish bigs, Chris, but that's a different story for a different day.
Well done.
There are different jobs, and they should be different jobs. And I really like and agree with what Wick Rausbeck said in the press conference today, is that in Boston with the Celtics, ownership views those two jobs separately. You have the president of basketball operations or the head coach over here, the president of basketball operations, the GM over here, and the head coach over here. They're different things. We've seen franchises try to do it differently. That was the trend for a while, whether it was Doc Rivers in LA with the Clippers when he left the Celtics, or in Minnesota, Tom Thibodeau, Stan Van Gundy in Detroit. The results were mixed, I think, at best, Chris. And what everybody realized, I think, including the guys who actually did those jobs, Rivers, Thibodeau, Van Gundy, it's too much for one person to do, especially in the NBA today. So good for the Celtics ownership and for Stevens for separating those. As a head coach, you're concentrated on what do I do today to get my team ready to play tonight or tomorrow. It's that short-term mentality which you need to have as a coach. As an executive, you need to balance the short and long-term. Obviously, you're concerned about your team on the court, but you're also looking ahead to the draft and then free agency and then planning years ahead. So they're two different jobs with two different mindsets, and that's why I think the league quickly shifted toward the two hats model, so to speak, when you're a GM and a head coach, and then shifted away from it, said that's too much for one guy to do. As Celtics owner Steve Pagliuca said in the press conference today, these jobs individually take up about 100 hours a week for each guy. So there aren't 200 hours in the week, Chris, which makes it virtually impossible to do both jobs at a high level.
Yeah, I don't think anyone should ever hold both jobs again. Maybe the only exception might be Eric Spoelstra in Miami. If and when Pat Riley quits, I could see Spoelstra having the bandwidth to do both jobs. I mean, he's involved in the day-to-day, as it is anyway. They got like a three-man band there in Miami that is involved in the decision-making tree. So I could see Spoelstra assuming a larger role in keeping Andy Ellsberg and some of the guys, but this is not an Eric Spoelstra podcast. We'll save that conversation for a different day. I don't blame Brad Stevens for wanting this. Brad Stevens can always go back to being an NBA coach. He can always go back to being a college coach. The shine is not off him, despite the fact the Celtics have had kind of a rocky last 3 years for various different reasons. If he was a coaching free agent today, and I think you would agree, half a dozen teams would be lined up to try to hire him. There's a lot of respect for Brad Stevens league-wide. But it's been a bit of a grind, Ryan, over the last few years for Brad Stevens. You had the 2018-19 season, which was Kyrie's last year, which was a complete disaster in, you know, every possible way. That was a title contender coming into the season that completely unraveled and got smoked in the second round. Then comes last season, a better season chemistry-wise, but you have to go into the bubble and you go through that stress. And then comes this season, which had myriad challenges that Brad Stevens had to deal with, and it ends with a first-round whooping at the hands of Brooklyn. So I can see in Brad Stevens' mind, like, all right, well, this opportunity is going to present itself. Why not push for it? Why not try to jump on this job? If it doesn't work out, well, I'll either take my coaching job back in Boston, as, I mean, we kind of saw Doc do that in a way, like went from both jobs into one with the Clippers. Not to say Brad would necessarily do that, but it's possible. Or I go somewhere else and, you know, coach, you know, in a different location. I mean, most coaches wind up in multiple spots in their career. So I don't fault Brad Stevens for pushing for this. This is where I kind of take out the stick, because I don't love that ownership did not open this up after the season and start looking for somebody different, or at least cast a net. And you know what? Forget a net, Ryan. I'm talking about one guy. I'm talking about Sam Presti. I don't understand why there was not an aggressive push to get Sam Presti. I mean, you know Sam. He's from the Boston area. Played high school basketball in Concord, played college basketball at Emerson, loves everything about Boston, still comes back in the summertime to hang out in the Boston area. I would have approached him about this job. Not to mention, he's arguably the best GM in all of basketball. I would have approached him about this position. At the very least, try to back channel something and see if he was interested. And if it was, make him an offer and try to get him into Boston. If you're Sam, you know, one of the reasons I think this would have been an opportune time for him to leave is that Oklahoma City is pretty well set up for the future. I mean, they're not a contender by any stretch, but you've got two decent cornerstones in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Lu Dort. They've got 17 first-round picks over the next 4 years or so, 5 years or so. So they're in a good position there. Relatively clean books once Al Horford comes off it. I mean, there's a succession plan basically in place. I mean, Rob Hennigan is pretty much positioned in Oklahoma City to take the job if and when Sam were to leave. I look at this, Ryan, as perhaps a blown opportunity to not only have perhaps a top five coach on your roster in Brad Stevens, but to potentially have the best GM in the NBA, who's also in his mid-40s, who could grow in that job for the next 18 years as well. Where do you stand on that?
Well, a number of good points, Chris. I have as much respect for Sam Presti as I do for any executive in the league. He's obviously one of my peers for a long time and has done as well as anybody, especially given some of the challenges in that market that he's faced. You know, OKC is obviously not a free agent draw. So for him to have the team at a high level essentially every year, except for this year when they chose to dip down with a number of good young players and draft picks. So he's as good as any executive in the league. I don't doubt that. I know he has a very good and comfortable working relationship with Clay Bennett, the owner of the Thunder, and Clay Bennett's given him the latitude to really run the franchise unfettered, like few executives in the league have, really, with any franchise. So I know Sam values that, and I believe he's on a long-term contract. Every time I've asked somebody about it or talked somebody about it, said he's under contract for a number of years. So I get what you're saying in theory. I think the challenges are Presti's comfort and stability in Oklahoma. And also then, you know, if it doesn't work out, which given what I know, Chris, I think it would be less likely than likely that Presti would want to leave and be able to leave Oklahoma City, especially, you know, right now to come run the Celtics. Then what do you do to Brad Stevens? Say, well, we talked to you about not being the coach, but you're not going to be the president. You're maybe our second choice as president of basketball operations. It's a little bit awkward. That's my point. So you'd have to know as Celtics ownership or be relatively certain that you could get Sam Presti and that he'd want the job and that he would take the job in Boston. And I just think that they really believe in Brad Stevens. They've known him for 8 years. They've never worked with Presti. So that familiarity, that continuity with Brad and the ability with a good infrastructure in place with the staff, let's give him a shot. Let's see how it goes. And then, developing that relationship over an 8-year period, they have that trust, they have that bond, and I think in their mind they have the right guy for the job, even if he's not experienced in doing the job that he's now going to do.
Well, I love this part of the conversation because I could not disagree more with like 90% of what you just said there. Now, with Presti, yeah, he's got stability. And I think he actually has a lifetime. Like, he's got a contract there that, that basically guarantees him that job forever. Like, I think he's going to be there. You know, he can stay there for till the end of time. But we talked about shelf life with these jobs. Sam Presti's been with Oklahoma City so long, they were the Sonics when he first started with them. Like, that's how long Sam Presti has been in Oklahoma City. He has taken them near the mountaintop, you know, to the NBA Finals in 2012. He has built a winner. He has done in a small market what very few executives have ever done in a small market. He's still a relatively young guy, and I believe, and this is not based on anything he's told me, but I believe that a new challenge would appeal to Sam Presti. As far as, like, you know, insulting Brad Stevens or whatever, like, I mean, is it really insulting if you say you're the second choice to the best GM in basketball? Like, I mean, you feel like we didn't get the best possible guy, but, you know, you're right there after it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that to me is like, you know, I don't know what the analogy would be, but I think that that's almost being too sensitive to a guy's feelings. Not to mention, Brad is still under contract, was still under contract as a coach for many years. I think he recently signed a contract extension with Boston. So I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't think it was going anywhere. And, you know, one of the appeals of Sam Presti in Boston is that he has a great relationship with Brad Stevens. He loves Brad Stevens. I mean, he was one of the first to kick the tires on hiring Brad Stevens, you know, back before the Celtics poached him in 2013. I mean, Sam was interested before that. I mean, he had a successful thing going with Scott Brooks in Oklahoma City around that time. But if it wasn't as successful, I think there's a scenario where Brad Stevens would have been the head coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder in those days. So I don't know, man. Like, I get what you're saying. I just think if there's a window to get a guy who, along with Masai Ujiri and Pat Riley and maybe a handful of others, Dennis Lindsay's incredible, but who can do the job at the highest of levels, I think you got to go all out, or at least, you know, explore it, right? Like, don't announce a new president of basketball operations the day that Danny walks. I understand this wasn't done, you know, in the course of a couple of days. This has been months in the making for sure. But I don't know who would have hurt to kick the tires on Sam Presti. And you and I both know you can back channel these things. I mean, you know, tampering, whatever. Like, there's phone calls that can be made to gauge interest in somebody through their agent or whatever. In that circumstances, I would have gone all in, man. Like, that to me would have set the Celtics up incredibly with two mid 40s coach and executive who could potentially be with his team for a decade plus to come.
Oh, I understand what you're saying, Chris, but I don't think the fine folks in Oklahoma led by Clay Bennett see it that way, where, you know, with the shamrock colored glasses, like, let's do whatever we can to help the Celtics. I don't care if Sam Presti has a 10-year deal. Well, why don't we just let him go to Boston and then destabilize our franchise? So these things are real. I mean, look, it's a competitive business. You know, I don't know what Clay Bennett would have said if Wick Grausbeck and Steve Paliuka called, or if they tried to back channel. I have no idea. I'm just telling you the way I think the process went for the Celtics and why they did not do, or seemingly did not do that with Presti. They had a guy they liked. They want to give him a shot. They realize if they slide him over from head coach to president of basketball operations, they can retain relative stability with Mike Zarin, Austin Ainge, and others in the front office helping Brad grow on the job. So that's what they decided to do. And like you said, this decision was not made after the loss in Game 5 last night. This is a multi-month process that, you know, according to some of the reports I read today, started right after the trade deadline in late March, and then, you know, was solidified or finalized early this afternoon when they had the press conference.
Yeah, it might have even been earlier. I mean, I asked Wick at the press conference, you know, like, when, you know, asking him about kind of doing a national search, and he said that, you know, his conversations with Brad started around then, but he got a feeling that Brad and Danny had discussed it a lot earlier than when he had originally discussed it. So, yeah, I mean, look, I have a hard time ever criticizing Brad Stevens. I've been one of his staunchest defenders, even through all the problems of the last couple of years. He is, again, a brilliant basketball mind. So that job, if you have a chance to at least try to go get that guy, I think you had to make an effort. A couple last things. He's got to hire a coach now. Any thoughts on what kind of coach makes sense for the Celtics? Now, I'd reported that they're going to interview internal candidates in Boston. They've got some good ones there. Jay Larinaga has been interviewed for a head coaching job by multiple teams in the past. I think Scott Morrison is excellent. He coached the Maine, formerly known as Red Claws, for several years. up there before becoming an assistant coach under Brad. Jerome Allen has been a head coach in the college ranks, has a good reputation, among others, on that staff. And after they get through that, then they're going to look outside the organization. I've heard Ime Udoka with Brooklyn as a strong candidate. Udoka comes from the Spurs system, coached in Philadelphia under Brett Brown, has worked for the Nets, and now working for the Nets under Steve Nash. I think he's a fine candidate for that job. But any sense about, or any thoughts on what kind of coach makes sense to work for Brad Stevens and coach this roster?
I think you hit the nail on the head, Chris, with them starting internally. I honestly think that would probably be a tougher sell to ownership than hiring somebody externally. I think the perception, fair or not, would be, wait a minute, now is Brad Stevens going to be the president of basketball operations but also have his hand in influence with one of his assistants being promoted to the head chair? So I think that's something that Brad needs to be cognizant of. And then if he does want to go to bat for one of those guys who have very good reputations, as you mentioned, whether it's Larinaga, Allen, or Morrison, or somebody else in the staff, he has to have a pretty good reason why, and I think sell that to ownership. So I think they'll look external. I think they'll look NBA, some of the top assistants. One you mentioned who will be a head coach in the NBA. It's just a matter of time. Ime Udoka, who's on the bench in Brooklyn now with the Nets. He's excellent. Another guy I think deserves a shot and a long look is Darvin Ham in Milwaukee, who's been with Mike Budenholzer every step of the way and had a big role in the Bucks' success and also before that the Atlanta Hawks' success. So you look around the league, the short list of top assistants who have never been head coaches. I talked to a number of those guys. Nate Tibbetts in Portland's another one who hasn't gotten a shot yet, who's very good. And obviously they've done a great job developing their players and kind of maximizing that roster with the Blazers. So I think they'll cast a wide net. I think they should cast a wide net, Chris. One of the advantages that the Celtics have, and this is where their ownership is smart and forward thinking, is by making this change immediately, they get a jump on the pack. In fact, one of the things that was reported by John Hollinger and others today is that there haven't been any GM or head coaching changes in the offseason. That's pretty unusual, as you know, especially we're a couple weeks now from the end of the regular season, and the non-playoff teams are obviously long gone, into the offseason. So they have a jump on the field, and I think they should take advantage of that, start the interview process relatively soon, even if that's starting with the internal candidates and then going externally. And Chris, I never saw the downside, especially when you don't have any pressure on the back end as far as the season starting or some big event like the draft or free agency imminent. I never saw the downside in trying to talk to a number of good candidates. Maybe you learn some things along the way about player development, analytics, scouting, video, whatever it is. And then you develop some relationships that you didn't have before. And then you're only going to hire one guy. But if you talk to a number of them, you can learn some things that benefit your franchise at a high level.
Before I let you go, you grew up in the Boston area. You worked for Danny Ainge. Nationally, Danny can be something of a lightning rod, right? Like, whether it's, people criticize him for not making trades and overvaluing his assets in a way and some of the things he says publicly. He can be something of a target because of that. But Ryan, you look back at the last 18 years, Danny Ainge has an incredible legacy. Like, you take over the Celtics when they are near the bottom, like not in a good position. Yes, they had Paul Pierce, but not a team that was viewed anywhere close to a championship contender. You had, as you mentioned, that historic losing streak was it 06-07? And then the next year, you make the deal, you get Ray Allen, you get Kevin Garnett, and you win a championship. Top that off with him pulling off one of the great heists in NBA trade history, dealing Pierce and Garnett and getting the draft picks that turned into the players the Celtics have today, specifically Tatum and Brown. I mean, you can nitpick some of the things he does, and I've done it. Like, I would have pulled the trigger on a couple of different things. I mean, I would have Miles Turner, Doug McDermott, the Gordon Hayward stuff. Like, you can nitpick some things, but overall, man, you can't argue with Danny's legacy. It's right up there with all the great Celtics executives of the last 50, 60 years. He has done a tremendous job with this franchise. That's just how I kind of see it.
No, I see it exactly the same way. Obviously, I'm biased. He's a friend of mine, and we worked together for a decade and had a lot of success. And, based on that success, I got the GM job in Phoenix with the Suns. So, I think the hardest thing to do in sports, Chris, or in any industry, is to be consistently good and a borderline excellent year in and year out. As you know, the Patriots have done that, but it's rare. I mean, it's really rare and really hard to do. Everybody can have a good year here and there where you spike it or you put a lot toward, having the team really hit one year, but it's hard to maintain that level. And that's what, as I look at that time period, almost over two decades, six Eastern Conference Finals, two NBA Finals, the championship in 08. Look at it a different way. Only two guys in the league who are Hall of Famers who've had that job longer than Danny Ainge had it in Boston. That's Pat Riley in Miami and Greg Popovich in San Antonio. So there's a reason that those have been arguably the most successful franchises, those three, the Celtics, Spurs, and Heat, over the last two decades. And the biggest reason for that, the main reason for that, is Danny Ainge.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Whatever he does next. And by the way, I do think there's something coming next. I don't know what he's going to do, but the Celtics used the word retired in their press release for Danny Ainge. I don't know about you, but I don't believe he's retired. Maybe he goes back to Utah, goes back to Southern California, takes some time off, but there's a next step for Danny Ainge, I believe. Do you agree?
I don't know, Chris. I haven't talked to him yet. In the short term, I'm expecting him to see him out here in Arizona, probably at Greyhawk or Whisper Rock or, you know, so when I get together with him, I'll let you know. But this is a guy who I think is burned out, and I think that's understandable. Shoot, I was a GM of the Suns for 5 years. I was burned out after that. He did this job almost four times as long as I did. I mean, it's a grind being a head coach or a GM. So I bring it up because I don't think he knows. And he said today he doesn't know what the next step is. The word, you know, retirement is easy to use. And I think if you ask him today, do you want to work somewhere tomorrow? He'll say no, or a week from now, or a month from now. But then you get, you know, X period of months or years down the road, and he's recharged and something changes. So I personally don't think this is the final chapter. I think there probably is a next act. He's in his 60s at this point, Chris, but it's a young 62. He's energetic, borderline hyperactive. He doesn't sit still that well. So I think this summer you'll see him a lot on various golf courses. And then after that, you know, once we get into next NBA season, and especially into 2022 and beyond, I wouldn't be surprised if he does end up resurfacing running another franchise.
He's just too competitive, man, to make me think he's going to play golf for the rest of his life. He's just way too competitive to do that. But we'll see. Again, tremendous legacy, a lot to be proud of what he accomplished in Boston. Ryan, always good to talk to you, man. Thanks for the insight and sticking up late with me here.
Anytime, Chris.